When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, who shows this?
You mentioned the haymakers that LeBron threw down the stretch of that one. A lot of those are bad possessions. I'm going to be honest.
Like they are for sure.
The jab step threes. Yeah. He makes it and it's good result on bad process or whatever. But if he misses that shot, we're all sitting there during all access Lakers saying like, what is that possession? What is it? You know, he just happens to make those shots. The plays that I liked, right, was when he was getting to the basket and he was getting to the free throw line and those kinds of plays. And again, I don't know if it's a matter of conditioning. I don't know if it's a matter of the elevation. But for some reason, like, you know, he doesn't have that. He hasn't had that consistently in this series.
Yeah, it's strange because Denver started to adjust their pick and roll defense to kind of force LeBron to attack the rim, right? LeBron was passing every time. I think he had 14 or 15 assists, and they started playing for the pocket pass, and LeBron was forcing them. You talked about the bad shot. Do you remember the pass to Rui? Like, he had Rui on a pick and roll. He came off and, like, thread this pocket. And Rui got free throws. Like, LeBron needed to make more layups. I know that's like not nice to say. It's just he missed a lot at the rim, and like some of those, yeah, he didn't get the call. But those are shots that just have to go in. Rui missed a ton.
He's
too.
A dunk.
He kept
on doing like the right hand left side of the basket thing, and it's like turn your hand this way and dunk it that way.
Well,
you know.
And
again, it's tough to ask him that at age 39 or whatever. But again, like, you need to ask astronomical things to beat the better team.
You do. And I thought, you know, Denver is very, you talked about their discipline on offense. They are super disciplined on defense too, right? Christian Brown is in his second year, but he shades LeBron to the correct where the help is coming. LeBron is driving into a wall. And those are fouls. Like, I think so. But like in the playoffs, you're not getting enough.
Especially
to
in just Denver. Get
in Denver. You're not finishing. I tweeted before the game, Anthony, I can't believe you read out those minutes. I said need at least 40 minutes plus from Bron, AD, Austin, Rui. It's amazing to me none of them touched 40. To the point that Austin didn't have it going offensively, it's just, you know what it felt like? It felt like when we were playing Dennis Schroeder. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we were playing Dennis Schroeder to guard Jamal Murray, but he tanked our offense so much that, like, the positive outcome of him chasing around Murray, and there's arguments to whether he was really bothering Jamal in any real sense. It felt like once Jamal started cooking, it really didn't matter if Jesus was guarding him, like he was going to get baskets anyway. But like Gabe Vincent, I thought was doing an okay job. I thought, and then we brought Austin in with like 4 minutes left.
According to Garvin, when Schroeder was guarding Jamal, that was Jesus guarding him. Like that.
Right. Yeah. That was
according to Darvin. Schroeder could walk on water. So
that's Jesus's NBA comp to Darvin. for me. But I thought we sat Austin too long, 32 minutes, and we try to go to our bread and butter, right? Anthony, what's our bread and butter? It's Austin, LeBron, ball screen. I thought Austin was just in no offensive rhythm to be doing that. He hit the one fading jump shot, which goes to your point of another bad process shot that just went in. And, like, yeah, our offense stalled.
33 minutes for Austin.
That's just too low. Like, he was guarding Jamal Murray, and he's your offensive threat. You got to die on the players that brought you here. I know Gabe's played well. I just didn't think this was the spot. I think you needed to go down with your guys fighting. I just, like, there were plays where LeBron had the bunch of haymakers and then D'Lo was walking it up. You could tell D'Lo wanted no part of that physicality in the end of the fourth. Like, the Denver upped the intensity to a point where, like, D'Lo could not come off switches. He could not get separation. He was not about to take a bad step back three. I don't know why he was holding it. Bunch of possessions down the stretch where D'Lo's just holding. He picks up his dribble right, does a cardinal sin, picks up his dribble right near the baseline. He's, like, looking for handoffs to Austin. Austin gets it, takes a tough shot. It's just – the execution difference between these two teams is just, that's the sad part to me watching this. Denver went down every single possession, knew exactly what they were doing. Jokic post up on AD, Jamal Murray pick and roll. We were guessing LeBron ISO on Aaron Gordon, pull up jump shot. It's just, that's where this series was lost, is the execution down the stretch. This game, even fourth quarter of game one, we had the 12-point lead, but it was closer down the stretch before the terrible, you know, turnovers or whatever. You can connect that to the games last year in the playoffs too, that mattered. So yeah, just to lose in every clutch situation is, that's a tough way to lose. Like, again, if we were blown out tonight, I can kind of sit with that a little bit better. I could logically process that, Anthony, a little bit more. Like, okay, they blew us out in game two. Like, we really just did not have it in Denver. Recollect and refocus for game three in LA. But to lose this way, like up 20, like imagine how they had us mentally before. Imagine now. Like, you go, like, you're at a 20-point lead and we still walked you down. We still didn't get nervous. We still didn't, like, shy away. Like, that's, I don't know how you even approach.
So Anthony Davis started the game 14 for 15. He then missed. He went 0-4 after that. He finished the game 14 for 19. That hurts. That hurts. You know, like,
yeah.
I thought he was playing a special playoff game. I thought he was playing great defense. He was guarding Jokic while he was doing those things. You can't have that from somebody that, you know, like I think Lakers fans want AD to be a thing. Like, they want him to be like an alpha option, or your primary option, especially after LeBron, right? That's going to be the hope from him. You can't disappear like that, man. Like, as special as that, as 14 to 15 was to start the game, you know, going 0-4 after that for the remainder of the game is just killer. That ruins games for you from, you know, to that point, your best player just disappearing. Like, that's not something that happens to the Denver Nuggets. That doesn't happen. Jokic doesn't disappear like that, right? When LeBron was in his prime, he didn't disappear like that. And again, like, I'm not saying that Anthony Davis, you know, is on that level, but that's the problem, is that Anthony Davis is talented enough to be on that level, but he just is not on that level, you know?
Yeah.
But like the 33 minutes for Austin Reeves is just,
that's insane. That's insane. It's
33 minutes from Austin Reeves to give 25 minutes to Spencer Dinwiddie and Gabe Vincent. And in those minutes, Spencer Dinwiddie and Gabe Vincent in 25 minutes together, not together, but total between the two of them, 0 of 3 from the field, 0 of 2 from 3-point range, no free throws, one rebound between the two of them, two assists between the two of them, three steals between the two of them, no block shots, two turnovers, and three fouls. One was a -9. The other one was a -6. They combined for 0 points. I don't think either has scored in the series. Those are the guys that are supposed to be your floor setters when D'Lo doesn't have it.
Yeah. So, Austin finished a +5, Anthony. Like, I almost want to get up from that. Like, he finished a +5. Gabe is a -6. Spencer a -9 in 10 minutes. Like, just, they didn't have it, and their offensive games have been dead. I we were talking about how you had to make a quick hook on D'Lo. You need quick hooks on Gabe was fighting against Jamal Murray. I think that's fine. Just, you can't be a zero on offense either. He was absolute liability on that end, and Dinwiddie's just decision making. I can't believe it. I can't believe that's a play he went for.
Decision making, and again, this to me is a culture quote. Okay. Anthony Davis is from Dave McMenamin. Lane, I saw your comments here. I wanted to verify that it was a real quote because it's fucking incredible. Anthony Davis, quote, "We have stretches where we don't know what we're doing on both ends of the floor." Who do you think that's directed at? Like, who sets your culture? Like, who sets your coach? What is a coach if he isn't a culture setter, you know? And there are just the coaching staff has not put together enough like underlying principles for the Lakers to be successful when they freelance. Like, if you're going to rely on freelancing to the extent that the Lakers are going to, You better be a fucking great freelancing team. You have to be. Instead, the Lakers are a terrible freelancing team, and they love to freelance. You know, like,
yeah,
like it's just, it's a terrible combination. It'd be one thing if it was like, if the Lakers were scoring like at least a point per possession on your freelancing, then like you could get away with freelancing as much as you could, right? As the Lakers like to, but they're scoring like 0.7 or 0.8 points per possession on those freelancing things. And like an average NPA possession is 0.1. That's like the goal for everybody. At least it's sure. A bare minimum is 1 point per possession. And for the Lakers to be well below that mark in freelance as often as they do, again, it's a fundamental misunderstanding from everybody. Anthony Davis just said it. Anthony Davis just said it for everybody. We have stretches. Quote, we have stretches. We don't know what we're doing on both ends of the floor. Go ahead.
That's an awful quote. And like that, and just, I'm gonna be honest, Anthony, I'm not trying to hear that right now. Like, I'm just not. Like, I understand that's maybe that's a Darnham. No, for sure. But I'm just saying like that there's two halves in that game. The first half they were playing really well, and maybe it's different because I understand the wanting to run very organized offense. I think the problem is that, you know, maybe when LeBron's 35, you can do it this way, right? Like if LeBron's 35, 34, we're still kind of running that same offense. I know you call it, we call it freelancing. I think what it is mismatch hunting, right? That's kind of what we're going with. That's kind of what playoff offense is. And we just couldn't do it, you know, at the ability that we were supposed to. But like, that's a tough quote to kind of come out now. Like, we don't know what we're doing on both ends. That's not only on Darvin, that's on all the scouts. I'm hoping you played this team freaking 30 million times. You should have film on these guys. You should know what you're doing on every possession. They play seven guys. Like, it's not like you have a full rotation to really scout on. They play seven, eight guys. You should have a consistent defense and a consistent offense that you're running. But yeah, if like maybe LeBron's 35, you can freelance more. I'm with you. Like, you got to run more sets. I just like, what did AD shoot in the second half? 2 for 8 or something? I think I had his second half numbers up. Like, that's just not enough. That's not enough offensive possession. So yeah, like, I blame some of this on the play calling. I think that, you know, the defensive end, we played defense well enough to win this one. The offense died. There's a lot of places to go with that. But I think in most cases, Anthony, if you look around the league, what is your offense down the stretch? It's your best player. The ball should be in the best player, your best player's hands, and have them create a shot for them or create a shot for somebody else. Like, yeah, that's what it should be down the stretch. And we just didn't do it. We didn't match Denver's ability of doing that. Like, I don't know how that's, we didn't know what we were doing. Like, there's ways they can kind of,
that's a shot at
that.
The third quarter. Like, I think that's okay. A shot at the third quarter. It's like, you know, cause that group out there played really stupid. Like, they played really, really dumb in that third quarter.
Yeah.
And frankly, like the Lakers were up by 9 points. What was it with like 6 minutes to go in the game, maybe five.
Five minutes,
you would like to win that game, but Denver is so good in clutch situations. And I don't know if the numbers back it up. That's where, like, I just don't care about analytics. Like, I don't care if the Nuggets are a top five team in the clutch. I just don't care. They do understand what they need to do to score in those possessions when they need to against the teams that they want to win against. And so with the Lakers there in that third quarter, you need to at least maintain like a 15-point edge going into the fourth, so that instead of it being a 9-point game with 6 minutes to go, it can be something closer to an 11 or a 13-point game. Cause that's what you need. You know, the Nuggets are too good in those clutch moments.
But they're also too good for that too, Anthony. Like, they're just too good for you to be up 15-16 going to the fourth. Like that's their only hope. Yeah, but that's an unreal ask, though. That's an unreal ask as well. Like,
it's Denver's an unreal ask for them to win the series. That's why I said going into the series that they were going to lose. That's why I wanted to win. Like, I would have preferred to lose to the Pelicans and play against the Oklahoma City Thunder, because it's unrealistic to ask the Lakers to beat the Denver Nuggets. They've beaten you 10 straight times in a variety of ways, somehow still kind of following the same script. But still, like, at the end of the day, like,
I'm tired of this movie, Anthony. Please get this movie off my screen. I'm tired of this freaking movie. I'm tired of it. Please change
like,
the actors.
This is legitimately what like the bad guys in Avengers movies feel like, right? You've lost so many times in a row. This is how the Joker feels against Batman. We're like, eventually Batman's going to figure it out. He's going to let you live. And you're going to run your next plot. And then he's going to figure that out too. And he's going to let you live. Even though in my opinion, letting Joker live is more unethical than murdering him in the first place. But this is who the Nuggets are. This is who the Lakers are. And in that third quarter, when you have a 20-point lead in the third quarter, you can't finish up only 10. You can't. You cannot.
But you knew they'd make just really quickly on the Avengers. Thanos is part of Avengers too, right? Mm-hmm. Or he's part of like the movie scene.
Yeah, yeah. I remember
I was like, bring on Denver, and someone said that's kind of like saying bring on Thanos. I was like, didn't Thanos lose eventually? So Thanos did eventually lose.
Look, at some point, Jokic is going to retire, and then the Lakers might beat Denver, maybe.
Oh, man. But, like, so we were at halftime on playback, and we were up, whatever, 15 at halftime. And I said, Denver's going to throw a hard punch. Like, they're too good. This is a home game for them. You're in Denver, right, on the road, one of the toughest places to play in the world. At least basketball wise, like you knew they would make a run, and to get out of that, I just checked the play-by-play, by the way, Anthony, we were up 8 with 5:20 left to go in the fourth with the ball in our hands. So like, that's just looking at this macro really quick, 8-point game on the road. I know it's Denver. Let's take that out for a second with LeBron James having the basketball. Like, you should be able to win those games. Like, you should. Then what's the whole point of what we're doing here? If you can't win an 8-point game with your two stars on the floor playing well, then what are we doing here? Like, being up 15 is unrealistic. I know you're saying you can't beat Denver anyway, just asking to be up 15. Like, they were gonna make shots, and they made some. KCP had one where he bobbled and made it. I think every MPJ three was just sent from the gods. Like, every single one was contested, it felt like, and he just nailed them. But I don't know, like, saying it was over just because we weren't up 15, like, that's a tough thing for me to kind of wrap my head around, I guess. Like, I knew Denver would make a run.
Tried everything else, but when you arrive back at that same place where Denver has the opportunity to outscore you down the stretch in a close game in the clutch, we know how that ends. You know,
yeah.
And again, like, it's not that like the Lakers aren't trying to outscore them and have a big enough lead, you know, going into those clutch minutes. It's not that they aren't trying to do that, but you can't have stretches like you did in the third when a 20-point lead gets cut in half in the matter of like a snap. Like, you can't, and the way that you have that happen is by having stupid lineups out there that hadn't played together. You know what the worst quote of the night was? And like, I know LeBron's going to catch a lot of shit for his quote about the replay center. That was one of the most insane analyses of a foul rule, where like, it doesn't matter what happens after a player releases the shot. Like, you know how I know it doesn't matter what happens after a player releases a shot? You have an actual flagrant foul called for what happens after a player lands on somebody else's ankle when they shoot a 3-point.
Right.
Like, right. It's asinine to think that that was their reading of the call there. Scott Foster like should be in Guantanamo, but like that stretch there where you have that combination of guys that haven't played together all year. Frankly, Spencer Dinwiddie and Gabe Vincent have been teammates together for all of like 3 games this year. Like, something stupid where Dinwiddie wasn't on the roster all year, and then Gabe was finally able to come back and be healthy. That just hurts. It just absolutely hurts to give up that kind of a run with that combination of players out there. You know, it's the kind of thing like, Raj, you and I talked about like benching Russ or benching Brandon Ingram, right?
Sure. We're
like, okay, if you have a hunch about a combination like that, a combination that hasn't played together or going that kind of small, if you have a hunch that maybe it'll work there, it better fucking work. It had better work. And it didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't work. And that lead got cut in half. And instead of going into the fourth quarter, like, we were begging to go into the fourth quarter up double digits. We were begging. We were like on the floor, like, God, you have to go into the, you have. And then it was like, well, they're up double digits by
they
the
are.
Absolute bare minimum. Like,
right.
It's
right.
Just, and then the giving up on Rui, the giving up on Austin. It's just
that's the part.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Like, this coach, and I know, and we'll talk, I guess, a little bit about my reporting later in the show to wrap things up. But this is why Lakers fans responded the way that they did to a report that Darvin Ham merely might come back next year. You had Lakers fans freaking the hell out, right? Rightfully, in my opinion. And it's because, you know, in your game seven with your season on the line, you play your, whether you want to say he's third or fourth best player on your roster, 33 minutes. That's criminal. You can't do it.
Yeah, for sure. That's the part that's going to kill me. I thought all of those dudes had to hit 40. And Darvin had the quote before this game, right? It would be back to his normal rotations, which I guess he did good on that quote because nobody touched 40 minutes. I just that's the part that will kill me. That, like, you had to go with the guys that brought you here. I thought Austin, and again, Rui did not play well. Like, he did not shoot well, but I thought you needed size and physicality out there.
The bench did. Like, let's look at the lines from the guys who came off of the bench. You would say Prince did, right? And okay. If you go with six or seven man lineup or whatever, but, like, you know, Prince is the closest guy to, you know, anybody coming off of the bench who played even remotely well. Outside of Prince, who went in 22 minutes, 2 of 3 from 3-point range and had 6 points and 3 rebounds on the night. Jackson Hayes, 6 minutes, no points, 1 rebound. Again, I already talked about Spencer Dinwiddie and Gabe Vincent combining for no points in the remainder of that stat line there. So, like, okay, you would be able to get away with playing, you know, one of your starters or some of your starters fewer minutes or whatever if your bench was just absolutely lighting the world on fire, but they weren't.
Sure.
They were not. Sure. And you had none of your starters play at least 40 minutes. Like, that's the kind of thing that, you know, if the Lakers were a serious organization, they'd fire Rob Pelinka or they'd... There's a Freudian slip. They'd fire Darvin Ham before he could get on the plane to come home from Denver.
Yeah,
because that cost you your season. That's it right there.
100%. And we'll do an autopsy on this season. I was one that was campaigning to play Denver, and one of the reasons was not just because we could beat them or because we get them early, all the other things. Playing Denver gives you a lot of answers, Anthony, that you wouldn't get maybe playing another team. So I thought at least it's important in terms of it would kind of speed us up where we need to be. I think these next two at least are important from that factor. You'll have the report about maybe Darvin comes back. We'll get into that. But I think this is also big for Rui's future, for Austin's future on this team. D'Lo played well tonight, but, I mean, he still closed this game in a manner that's very – concerning. Just like, if you're looking to give that guy big money, just the how he kind of gets into a shell of himself. He had a big layup tonight. We'll also get lost in the ether, right? Coming out of a timeout, another, just to your word, like, bad process. Probably Lakers need a basket. I forgot how much time was left, but we run a little back screen and D'Lo shoots a floater over Aaron Gordon, very reminiscent of game one against the Warriors last year. But I think these next few games will decide a lot of how the summer goes to me, and playing Denver gives you answers that you need. This is the top of the mountain, and to climb that, you see what the hurdles are. The hurdles are a Jamal Murray, a Jokic, Aaron Gordon, MPJ lineup. So, like, how we match up against that is extremely important and extremely informative. So hopefully they get a little bit momentum here to kind of show something. But I think these next games are big, at least just not just the player's future, but the guy coaching as well.
All right. Speaking of that, for Substack today, I hadn't written for Substack in a little bit because of my relationship with Lakers Daily, but I wrote for Substack today and reported on it that, I've had conversations over the last, I would say, few weeks or so with people either close to the Lakers or internally or, excuse me, around the league, asking what the vibes are with Darvin, what the chances are that he returns next year. This is probably as thoroughly reported as anything I've ever had. And the vast majority of people that I spoke to all came back and said, yeah, it doesn't make any sense, but my kind of gut feeling here is that Darvin is back next season. Right. And that was from a lot of people. And, you know, now look, if the Lakers get swept, I think their hand is forced here. Like you have to make a change if you get swept in the first round, right? Because had they lost in the play-in, right? Like the difference between Darvin keeping his job and not can't be one play-in win. Like it just can't. If he gets swept. So again, my opinion, if the Lakers get swept, they cannot bring Darvin. Frankly, honestly, Raj, I don't care what happens for the rest of the series. I'm good. We're good here. Like Darvin shouldn't be back next year under any circumstances whatsoever. That's me, my opinion, right? Sure. And I think a lot of people internally share that same opinion in the Lakers organization. The problem is the people at the very top don't want to share that opinion and are looking for reasons, any reason whatsoever, to basically not have to share that opinion. That being Rob Pelinka, that being Jeannie Buss. And again, we'll see what it looks like if they lose in the first round here. But what I reported, now, to be clear, there are two things that are out there right now. There's my actual reporting, what I wrote for Substack, and then there's a tweet from NBA whatever, Central. That has me saying that Darvin Ham is likely to be back next year. Darvin Ham is likely set to return as the Lakers coach next year, even with a potential early playoff exit per me. My report is that, and I think I have it, I don't have it up. My report is that, I should have it here. Sorry about this. Sources, even a first-round exit might not be enough to convince the Lakers to fire Darvin Ham. It's a semantics difference there, but that's a lot more qualified than Darvin Ham is likely to be back next year, right?
Right, right.
Whether people believe he should or shouldn't or whatever, that's a different conversation altogether. Yeah. But as it stands right now, the people that I've spoken to heading into this series the most of the people that I believe that I talked to coming into the series believe that Darvin would likely be back, even if they lost it, especially if they lost a competitive series. Right. Now, it doesn't look like this is going to be competitive.
Right. I think that's an important distinction there. Yeah. I'm not high on Darvin, but I kind of have more grace in terms of what's going on. And even you can't say close sweep on this one either. If you get beat, I can't do math, whatever it is, 13 straight times against 12 straight times by the Nuggets, you get embarrassed out of here, you lose both home games. Yeah, that I think a lot of changes are coming. It's kind of, Anthony, what is your goal next season, right? Is your goal win a title? Like, is your goal win a title with LeBron James and Anthony Davis? And there needs to be a group discussion here. What do they want? And from your reporting and from others, it's the reporting is that LeBron James is not a huge fan of Darvin Ham, to put it lightly. I'm not sure Anthony Davis. I'm not really sure of Anthony Davis's opinion on that. I guess the quote came out today, but that's fair. So if that's the case, then yeah, go huddle with them and make a decision. And if that's the route you go, make that fast. Make it, quick, sooner than later in terms of the coaching decision. But I don't think it's just Ham. I think the whole roster will be kind of flipped. I was talking about this with the Warriors and I forgot what other team lost in the play-in, the Kings. So it kind of like when you lose that early, and I put the Lakers into this, honestly, Anthony, like if they don't win a game in the playoffs, I think it gives you a license to do things that, advancing farther doesn't. So I think losing really early gives you a license, not just to fire Ham, to kind of flip the roster for, a totally different representation next year. So that's how I see it going. Again, I'm not inside as you are, but I feel like if they get swept or even if it's a gentleman's sweep, I think Darvin's likely gone. I think he needed to win this round or it'd be a competitive 6-7 gamer down the stretch and Denver just, outclasses you in the final games. If it's a five game kind of Lakers quit in game three, Lakers quit in game four, I think he's gone. Like, you can't bring that coach back. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think so. The reasons that I've been given and that I've been able to piece together on my own that, you know, that Darvin might be back next year is, one, if Rob Pelinka fires him, that's admitting he screwed up that hire, because he did, right? You fire a coach two seasons into a four-year contract after you fired a championship-level head coach to bring that guy in. That's a screw-up, man. And now the Lakers would be on the hook for $8 million for Darvin Ham over the next 2 years and whoever they would have to bring in. And that's where, you know, Genie's role in all of this comes into play, right? There was a report today that Mike Brown is looking for an extension that is of fair market value, I think was the phrasing. You know what that means? He sees Monty Williams' contract. He sees Doc Rivers' contract. And he wants, you know, some of that sweet, sweet coaching money too. And any coach, because the Lakers, I don't think, can fire Darvin and go out and sign another first-time head coach after that. You know, those experienced coaches cost more, right? If for whatever reason the Clippers stumble against the Mavericks, which I don't know how likely that looks now, but if the Clippers stumble to the Mavericks and you know, Steve Ballmer decides to go in a different direction with Ty Lue, Lue's going to he's going to expend a big ass contract from the Lakers, right? Will Gene be interested in paying that, you know? You know, there was another coach who came. Oh, Mike Brown, you know, if the Kings decide it's not worth it to sign him to a crazy contract and they decide to part ways with him after not making the play,
that would be insane.
Right? That'd be hilarious, right?
That's very Sacramento-ish. Like, that's Sacramento-ish, but yeah. That would be absolutely
It'd be also absurd. Lakers-ish to bring back Mike Brown after he was basically, you know, dismissed it five games into the Dwightmare season.
Very true.
So, like, you know, no matter if the Lakers do fire Ham here, that's a big money decision for Jeannie Buss, somebody who, you know, has said she doesn't want to, or leaked at least, she doesn't want to continue to, you know, keep paying and paying and paying, whether it's in terms of assets or in terms of actual financial commitment to a team that is barely involved in the playoffs. You know, that's something that needs to be taken into account here. And then, you know, the last thing here with Darvin, I wrote going into the last like month of the season that month was going to go a long way in convincing an organization that was looking for convincing that Darvin should stick around, right? And the Lakers played well down the stretch, right? They did kind of climb out of the depths of the NBA standings and only had to play one play-in game there rather than having to play two road playoff play-in games to get to the spot. And you know, that I think might go a little ways in convincing, again, Rob Pelinka and Jeannie Buss, who want to be convinced that they don't have to fire the guy. That might play a role in that too, that like, hey, look, he can learn. He played Rui eventually.